makes you think?
In addition, after our hundreds of interactions these past 3 years, my Australian accent has improved dramatically. I won't attempt it in a formal setting like this, but it's gotten very good. So thank you for that.
So the most important thing that I'm going to ask Mayor D.C. Reeves as he joins me here on the air once a week. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir. Good to have you. Get the formalities out of the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I can't wait for this.
Yeah. Well, you're the one who said all my questions are wingnut questions, so that's fine. Are you willing to do the rest of the interview in an Australian accent?
Yeah, I'm not that good. Actually, I heard you say that you were going to ask me to do this at some point last week, and I actually told a friend of mine who's in the car, I was like, yeah, whenever I heard that, I said, hey, the problem is he's going to ask me to do it, and my best Australian word is a four-letter word. That's the only problem. Is that I've heard it from Tyson so many times that I still can't say on the air.
Well, I feel like if you put out there that you're able and then you don't demonstrate, I feel like, I mean, it seems like a false claim, you know, so...
Broken promises,
yeah,
of a politician. I'm
but I guess the risk you run is, you know, do I prove it and swear on the radio, or do I just let people doubt me?
Right.
So I'll have to trust you. But okay, fair enough.
Still too formal the setting. This is a very formal show.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, 100%. I wear a tie every day. Okay, so on to more substantial things. Big week last week. I mean, the American Magic ribbon cutting, grand opening, SailGP announcing that we're going to bring. You know, oh, hey, by the way, we're bringing a training ground for an international super sport here. Just by the way, ho-hum, right? Kind of nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, that would be the equivalent of F1 or NASCAR saying, hey, we're going to buy 45 acres here. We're going to build a test track, and the teams are going to come in all the time. If you heard that with sports we're all more familiar, we're a little more familiar with, and that are a little older, so to speak, in terms of the league's structure, it would be world news. And certainly within the sailing community, this is world news. You actually just go to a Google News search and type in Pensacola SailGP. I mean, it's being covered in New Zealand and Australia and Europe and everywhere that this is going to be happening. So I think we're just scratching the surface of the understanding of the value of basically bringing the unequivocal highest level of international sailing on this planet. And they're making a headquarters, in essence, here. I think we're just scratching the surface. I don't think we even understand, I even understand yet, what the value of that and what it will be to us in 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, literally the first thing you get when you do that is the AI overview. Pensacola is now a major SailGP hub, serving as the first permanent shared training base for SailGP teams via a new partnership with the American Magic team. And then there's several other, you know, news outlets reporting on it, which is pretty fantastic. By the way, you got me thinking. You've no doubt seen the joke photo of downtown where Palafox has been turned into basically a lazy river, which I thought was pretty creative and clever. But, you know, since we're bringing SailGP here, could we not transform Palafox into, say, a Formula One track? And
Anything's possible. I think on that photo I posted, I said, I can hear it now. The mayor only cares about people who live on the water.
Nice.
Whatever that
good one.
River comes in.
That's great.
The honeymoon is over, as you know.
Right.
The saltiness begins. You know?
I actually thought it was kind of funny because it's not a lazy river if it's not a loop. So I thought it was kind of a misstatement. But okay, it's fine. We just leave these things go. Something that we're coming up tomorrow on the red light camera presentation by Chief Brown, but I just want to, as I understand it, she's only going to be presenting things that are, I mean, it's, we're actually going to learn less because the information is by a formal requirement by the state that you go July to July. Is that right?
That's correct. This is supposed to be a reporting for the previous fiscal year, obviously July to July fiscal year for the state of Florida. So all she's going to be reporting on is the first few months of data. So in essence, this is already information that we have shared, actually even less updated information than we've shared already publicly. But to spin this forward, my last update on red light cameras is what it's always been, which is we want safety improvements. We want to look at intersections and injury/fatalities at those intersections. Has it been helpful? And has it been helpful citywide? I think, Andrew, you've mentioned we talked about it on radio about, hey, man, is this intersection the one that has a light or isn't?
Yeah.
And it's that uncertainty. Is that having any reverberating impact of just seeing less accidents across the city. So those are the analytics that our police department is going to be looking into. And, you know, I maintain from day one what we've said all along, which is the goal here is public safety. And if it's not creating a market improvement after we have enough of a sample size as we're trying to continue to build, then we would modify from there. So, right. So we'll continue to take a look at it. But yes, if you see that on the agenda item, this is not going to be up to the day or up to the week information. This is actually going to be information that's already been shared by us in the public realm that's backdated for a state requirement.
You know, it might be worth a call to Chief Brown. I don't know how frequently you talk with her, but it might be worth her presenting, okay, this is what we have to report to you from the state, but this is the numbers as we actually have them current to date. That way people aren't confused and they actually get the good information along with the outdated information. Otherwise, people are going to be very baffled by all this. I worry. Anyway, just a thought. Obviously, we are in the middle of the Pensacola Police Chief interview process. It's all interviews all week. Can you maybe just take a second and explain to people who they have been interviewing with, what the process has been that's going to culminate with tomorrow's actual panel interviews, or today's, sorry, panel interviews?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really been a two-day process, yesterday and today. In summary, there was kind of an internal rotation. So we have three candidates, Brian Dugan, former police chief of Tampa, Eric Lindstrom from the current police chief in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Eric Goss, who's the acting deputy chief, of course, of the PPD. So the three of them did kind of an internal rotation with myself, with legal, with the council president and council executive in the morning yesterday. And then in the afternoon, we kind of did an external round, kind of carousel of the faith community, that leaders across in every corner of the city in the faith community had a chance to meet and greet with them. The business community, thank you to the chamber, Todd Thompson, for helping us put that on, and PBD, obviously the opportunity that for all three of them to spend some time at police headquarters and meet some of the folks there. So that was yesterday, of course, culminating last night at 5:30 at the Sanger. We did a town hall format where all three were answering the same questions in different order. We did live stream that and record it if you didn't hear about it or you do want to see their responses to. And those were questions from the public. Those were not from me. Those are not from us. We got about 40-ish questions from the public, and we distilled those down to 8 or 9 questions that would be kind of the same themes to cover all of our bases.
Yeah.
And then today is the formal interview, the panel, where there'll be 1 at 9 o'clock, 1 at 10 o'clock, 1 at 11 o'clock, also going to be live streaming and recorded as well, if you want to be able to watch this. So bottom line is this, Andrew, this isn't a requirement. This isn't a local requirement, a state requirement. The minimum requirement would be we could have 3 1-hour interviews and pick someone. But I feel like public safety is everybody's number one issue, as it should be. It's my number one issue, what I ran on and what I'll continue to discuss. And this job is too important for it to just be decided after a couple of interviews in an office somewhere. I think that having this public interaction is important. And when whoever takes this job has had the ability to interact with our community recently, I think is extremely valuable as well.
One thing, do we have a timeline? I mean, you're not deciding today, but do you have a timeline of expectation of when right. you will make a decision?
Not an exact day. I mean, obviously, I think our goal would be next week.
Okay.
I got to get with HR and all of the nuts and bolts and making sure we do everything in the procedure we're supposed to. So I'm not holding myself to a particular day. But obviously, you have two external candidates. You know, their decision needs to be made. This isn't going to be something that takes 3 months to do or 2 months to do, right? We need to go ahead and make a decision so everybody can kind of get on with their lives, so whichever way it goes. So that's what I'm shooting for, but not an exact day.
You know, I know it would be rude of me to ask, you know, if you've made a choice, if you have an early front runner or anything like that. But I will ask you this question, which is, you know, you and I've talked before about the value of having a nationwide search as opposed to just hiring internally. That's been a lot of discussion in town, obviously, and the union has come out with their support, whatever. Mm-hmm. The one question I do think that might be helpful is, based on what we've done so far, which is everything but the formal interviews, has having the interviews confirmed to you the value of doing this process, and has it made it challenging or harder for you because, in the good way, you now realize that you have more than just one obvious candidate?
Exactly. I mean, I think, again, this is other than the mayor's office, or maybe equal to, honestly, it's the most public-facing director job in the city. There's no doubt about it. And it affects what everybody in the city cares about most. That doesn't mean that the person that this woman or this man likes is going to get picked, but the bottom line is there needs to be that front-facing interaction and setting the standard that whoever's in this job is going to be out in the community and be, when it's good times, when it's bad times, you know, the expectation is that this person's out there leading our city and showing leadership in that way. So to me, again, it just didn't feel right to say, well, yeah, legally speaking, the decision rests with the mayor and we can interview a couple folks and pick somebody. We would have been not breaking any rules. We could have just done that. But I felt like that was a disservice to the citizens. And again, whether it's internal, whether it's external, I think we should show transparently that the best person, most fit for the job, should be able to stand up through a semifinalist aspect, through a finalist aspect, and be the right person for the job. So I think it's been very good, very valuable, and it also has given opportunities for people to ask questions that I may not think of. You know, if you're in the faith community, you're going to have different sets of questions potentially than I'm going to have, or if you're in the business community, you're going to have different questions. And so I think that interaction is extremely important as well.
Yeah, no, I very much agree. And I thought that, you know, you get different interests and different focus when you have not just the general public, but when you have these particular interest areas. And I thought that was good. And you would not get the same level of answers that you get if it was just one person going through the process, because they know in advance it's already a done deal. So, you know, it seems to me like this has been a valuable process. And I just wanted to make sure to confirm with you that you have found it valuable, which I presume means that possibly it makes your decision harder, possibly it makes your decision easier in some ways and clarifying, but in any case, that it's a better decision than it would have been made otherwise. So, you know, that's great. One thing I just... we could spend a lot of time talking about this, but it is kind of a brief thing. Have you guys figured out with the Escambia Children's Trust where you are? Is that done? Is that almost done? Where's that at?
Yeah. So we're pretty much at the finish line. All we were really down to is calculating what the number that we're going to be requesting is. And the math is not a mystery without getting into boring details. The short version is, the money that's owed to our CRA, less the money that the Parks and Rec Department with its ECT grant received. Not what they were awarded, but what they actually received. So that's the math. The actually received part, that's the math we're doing to say, okay, well, you owe us about $2.4 million and then less blank. And it's just making sure that we get our accounting correct so that when we go request that. But what I can tell you is ECT is aware of our direction on this. Certainly our team is aware of direction on this. So I expect mid-February we should try to get this to a resolution on both the ECT side and on the city side.
Very good. A lot of interesting stuff at the agenda review that we don't have time to get into. The Pensacola Sports Building, the discussion, brief though it was, about the structure of the CRA, Baptist demolition, the CDBG grants, all of that stuff. But, you know, we just don't have time to talk about it today. So we'll end with a lightning round, which we always do. First question is, do you double dip a chip under what circumstances?
If I'm in the friendly confines of my home, then I feel like anything goes. Not during a party. Don't worry. You don't have to worry about that if you come over. I feel like if I'm in my home around family, just like, you know, sharing a soda or whatever, you know, I think that's the only place that a mayor could ever be double dipping the chip.
So you in Sydney, yes. You at, I don't know, the reception for police chief, no.
Yeah, you can see the Facebook post now. This is a double dip of the chip by the mayor of the city of Pensacola. You know,
we always knew he was double dipping somehow. Yeah, that's funny.
Exactly.
Do you like to listen to individual songs, like playlists, or are you an album guy?
No, I'm an individual. You know, a little too much ADD in
me.
Song, bouncing just all over the place. A very ADB play history as well.
I got you. All right. And then the last one, this is the one that everybody really wants to know. You ready? Do you ever change your clothes in the car? Do you ever do so after having been mayor?
Actually, yes, I did last week when I left a event that somebody asked me to come to at a bowling alley. I was there for like 20 minutes. Then Actually had to go meet all the American Magic and CBT people, which I decided to not wear, you know, my bowling outfit type of thing too. So, yeah, absolutely. Zaragoza Street, changed right in the car, as quick as possible and as paranoid as possible that somebody's going to wonder what I was doing.
And that's why I have concerns about too many cameras. DC Reeves, he is the mayor of Pensacola.
Fair enough.
As always, thanks for the time. We look forward to the city council meeting tomorrow night and the meetings with the police chiefs today. Thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.